Welcome to Fostering Conversations, a podcast nurturing discussions centered around foster care, adoption, special needs, and child well-being. I'm your host, Intisar Siraj, digital content producer for Siraj Family Homes Incorporated. Founded in 1987, Siraj Family Homes Incorporated is a national foster care agency specializing in serving children with special and therapeutic needs.
Welcome to the podcast, Chad. Please introduce yourself. Give us your name. Tell us how long you've been with Siraj Family Homes and each capacity that you've worked with Siraj and like what you're doing currently there.
Okay, my name is Chad Coachman. I've been with Siraj Family Homes for almost 20 years. And during my time here at Siraj, I've been a case manager. I also work cases for IIHS, which is Intensive In-Home Services, and I'm currently CQI personnel.
What do you think has been one of the most challenging roles that you've had with Siraj?
I would say one of the most challenging roles I've had since I've been employed with Siraj is kind of seeing some of the kids and families that I work with not achieve the desired outcomes that we was working towards in the treatment plan. Let's say something, for example, maybe we was working towards a family reunification with a kid and a family, and it didn't go as planned. So I would definitely probably say that's been one of the most challenging, you know, roles I've faced since I've worked at Siraj Family Home. A kid not achieving the desired outcome.
So since we're here to talk about this anyway, could disruption or is disruption ever like an, well, obvious or maybe not so obvious reason behind a child not having the proper outcome that you wanted?
Yes, of course, disruptions play a major role, you know, with a kid not achieving desirable outcomes. I would say on a scale of 1 to 10 disruptions, play a scale of 100%, 90% chance of a kid not achieving a desirable outcome. Because without a stable home or a stable environment, it's almost impossible for a kid to achieve a desirable outcome.
Right. Well, let's take it back a little. First, for our listeners that don't even know what disruption is, can you please tell us what disruption is?
Yes. A disruption is repeated move of a child while he's in a foster care placement. It's pretty much a rejection between a child and the caregiver. But, you know, to just pretty much sum it up in a few words, so a pattern of repeated moves of a child is a disruption.
So you mentioned earlier that disruption is one of the causes for a child or a placement not going as well, or the child not having the desired outcome as you planned. So could you talk further about why that is? Like, why is stability so important for a child?
I mean, stability is so important for a child because first and foremost, it increases a child's mental stability. If a child is living in a stable environment, it improves social skills. It allows a kid to gain trust. It helps with the kid achieving proper education. A kid develops friends. And it also increases the chances of family reunification and adoption. So if a kid is in a stable environment, the chances skyrocket of this kid being adopted or achieving family reunification because this kid is in a more structured environment.
Okay, so you mentioned some of the benefits already, like they're able to have friends and et cetera. Are there any other benefits of having a stable home for a child that you might want to tell us?
I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, more benefits. Like, just say for instance, a kid was in a neighborhood or in a community for 10 years opposed to 2-3 months. I mean, it allows the neighborhood to get to know the kid. The kid may become acquainted with somebody down the street that's you know, that's a yoga instructor or a dance teacher or a music instructor. And by this kid being linked to this neighborhood for all those many years, to this community for all those many years, it might open up other opportunities for this kid. You know, this music instructor or this music teacher might be like, hey, you know, this kid been in the neighborhood for 10 years. You know, maybe he can come, you know, join my music class, or maybe I can teach him music. So it's plenty of benefits to a kid, you know, being in a community or being in a stable environment over a period of time.
Thank you. I really love that explanation, especially the emphasis on community life. You know, it's very important for anyone wherever you are. Could you tell us some of the causes that you've seen that cause a disruption to happen? Like, why is this even happening?
The first thought that comes to everybody's mind whenever we think about a kid disrupting his placement is the child's behavior. And that is true. That's the reason that most kids, you know, disrupt their placement. But I'm going to go into some more reasons that kids are disruption occurs that people never even give thought. For example, the foster parents may need more time to refocus. I mean, fostering a kid is a pretty difficult and tedious job. So when some of the foster parents get into this field of work, they realize like, hey, maybe, you know, this is not what I want to do, or, you know, I'm in a little bit over my head. So this can be a reason that sometimes kids are disrupted. Also, no one never gives much thought to the foster family may have to relocate. Let's say the dad or the foster dad or the foster mom job is relocating them to another state. So, you know, this could also be a reason for disruption. Someone may become sick or maybe a death within the foster family. And then, you know, that could be a reason for disruption. Also, the birth family and the foster family are some other members of the service of the kid's treatment team may be at odds. And the DHR or, you know, all the parties involved, the judge may consider, say, hey, this child may be better in another placement. So let's move this kid to another foster home. So that could also be a reason for disruption. But the number one reason for a child's disruption is the child's behavior. The child may be displaying violence towards other children that's in the family, or maybe even some of the pets. Or the kid may just constantly make up false allegations against the foster parents and her family. And, you know, this may cause disruption. So there are numerous reasons that a kid may disrupt their placement.
Thank you for all those amazing examples. Some of us definitely would not have even thought of. I mean, especially if we're not, you know, working the cases ourselves, which most of us listeners are not. You know, there's all these reasons, but even with your biological children, right, doing these sort of things or having the situations, of course, there's no option to really just be like, okay, you might have to go. And you just find a way to deal with it most times, right? But so what are, like, the fact that a child has to go through this, like, what are some of the reactions that you've gotten from children in such reactions? Or have you ever been up close and personal?
Yes. There is a lot of reactions that, you know, kind of affect the kid when these disruptions occur. It kind of dims the kid's trust, you know. Kids don't trust as much as they did before such disruptions occur. Also, you know, we got to keep in mind that friends play a major role in the development of kids. So, you know, a kid steady having to move and steady have to change friends and schools, you know, that kind of hinders the educational aspect of it for some kids. Some kids catch on and are a little bit more intelligent than others. Some needs a little bit more work. So by a kid remaining stable in their placement and not disrupting and moving so much, maybe this kid can catch on and kind of latch on a little bit more educationally, opposed to being constantly move from home to home, from school to school, and seems like everything starts back from ground zero when a kid having to move. So by a kid not moving as often and remaining stable, you know, it helps them educational wise. It helps their trust. I mean, their bonding issues, their trust. It just does so much when a kid is stable opposed to disruption and being moved.
Do you have any specific stories you could share, just, you know, keeping it general, no names or anything, of when this did happen? Like, you can tell us the reason for disruption and how the process was gone about with the case manager.
Yes, I will give an example. When I first started working with Sarai, I took on a case that was, the case was getting ready to be transferred to independent living. So the case that I took, the guy had been in foster care for a good while. I'm not totally sure how long he had been with Sarai's Family Homes, but he had been in DHR custody for a while. And when I took this case, guy was kind of older. I mean, he was a very intelligent guy. He was more in care for some behavior issues, and maybe his family wasn't there for him as much as they should have been, that the court felt like they should have been. So when I kind of took this case was kind of getting ready to be transferred to independent living. Anyway, the guy, he was of age. He was like an 18 young adult, and he kind of got caught up in with the wrong crowd one evening. And unfortunately, like, a robbery occurred. I felt real hurt behind it because, you know, at first I was feeling like, you know, I could have done more to save this kid. And I kind of didn't put all of me into, you know, getting this kid the help and the assistance that he needed. But I was also told, and I learned because I was young, a young worker at the time, I was also told that, you know, regardless of how much you do and how much you put back into your job, you would not be able to save everybody. So from that point going forward, I took a vow to always give my all and do the best I can to try to help and save every kid that I can. Even though I know it's impossible to save every kid, but at the end of the day, I don't want to leave work or go home not knowing that I did the best that I could and gave my all to help a kid and their family.
So working in a foster care agency, we're also not only concerned about the well-being of our clients, but also the well-being of our employees. So do you have any tips for the betterment of a person's mental health, who the people who are working on these cases, you know, like, how do you overcome the sadness and the grief that you also experienced having to see these children go through such things?
Yes, I'll revert back to the CEO. He always say, take time for yourself and your family first. You know, always reach out to somebody. You know, reach out and let someone know if you need to talk with, you know, somebody, or just vent. Don't hesitate, or, you know, just always reach out to somebody. Talk with somebody. Also, is, you know, it's hotlines. Or if you want to remain anonymous, it's hotlines that we have posted throughout the company that one can call and kind of vent and just talk with somebody about things that's going on in their personal life. Because a lot of times in this field, we kind of put our personal issues, our personal concerns to the side, and we're steady, daily, constantly trying to, you know, help other people and address their personal issues. So definitely in this line of work, you want to take time to yourself. You want to take time with your family, and you want to reach out to others. There's a lot of community resources that we know from being in this field that we utilize to help other families. So don't hesitate, as being an employee or a worker in this field, to utilize those resources for ourselves or for our coworkers, because that is why those resources are there, to help us in this mental health field.
Chad, excellent advice. Thank you. I want to pry a little bit. You know, you don't have to share if you don't want to. But I would love to know what you have done specifically also in these cases, where it be if you've gone home to just talk it out with your wife, if you had to put on a sad movie and just cry, if you had to take a walk. What are some of the things that you've done?
I kind of, to be honest, I lean and depend upon God. I also, I take time to reflect, you know, and just, I'm just thankful for the background that I have and how grateful I am and what such a strong family that I came from. So whenever things are kind of a little rocky for me, or if I'm feeling a little down, of course, you know, I talk to the wife and, you know, I hug and kiss on my kids, but I'll never forget again. I always say to CEO, he will say stuff like, "Chad, you know, you need to go home and see your family." I was so privileged once the CEO had came down and spoke to a group of youth, you know, back in my hometown. He spoke to a group of youth at our youth day. And every time we be on our staff meeting, the CEO might, like, he may say something like, "Chad, you looking this way, you need to go home and visit your family." And we'll come back and maybe meet the next week, and he will say, like, "Chad, did you go home?" I'll be like, "Yes, sir." He'd be like, "I can tell it in your face." So definitely, by first and foremost, I run back to that stable environment that I come from, which is home, where my family is. And every time I go there, it rejuvenates me, you know, that love, that bond, that it gives me the strength that I need to come back and, you know, pour that into some of these kids that were less fortunate as I was.
Amazing. So two things I want to highlight from what you just said. I love that you spoke on gratitude, basically, because whether you believe in a higher power or not, you know, there's always something to be grateful for, replacing disappointment, fear, sadness, whatever, with gratitude, because honestly, it could always be worse, right?
Yeah,
but also, definitely, you know, not to negate anyone's, yeah, feelings. Of course, have your feelings, honor your feelings, but also at the end of that, releasing the negativity, releasing those bad vibes or whatever, you replacing with gratitude so you can build yourself back up also. Love that. And then two, the fact that you're running back to your family, right? But yeah, you're blessed to have that family, that stability, that foundation, you said, which goes back to, yeah, why disruptions are so notorious in foster care and why community support and stability, family stability, is so important for youth in foster care. So love that you said that, because that just, yeah, really hits home once again that these children don't have that option, you know? So speaking of that, what are some tips for foster parents to possibly avoid having disruptions? Not that, obviously, you know, all of that is not always in their control, but what are some things, if it is maybe on the foster parent, or if there's just like a difference of personalities or whatever, what are some things that you've seen that can help avoid or smooth over a disruption before it really, you know, blows over really big?
Yes, I would definitely say, as being the parents and the adult, and even as workers, because a lot of times we as workers, we can help prevent these disruptions, but I definitely feel that we need to listen to the kids. A lot of times, you know, we're talking, we're teaching, we're coaching, we're training, but we're not listening. They're the one that's been traumatized. They're the one that's, you know, their family, no longer with their family, so, you know, we trying to tell them, do this. But at the same time, we're not listening. These are tips that I think can definitely reduce disruptions by we just listening to the kids, be considerate and understanding. You know, a lot of times we say, you know, when we just casually in a conversation or working with someone, you know, when others have went through difficult situations or going through trying times, the first thing we'll say is, "I understand." No, a lot of times we don't understand. I don't understand a lot of the stuff some of these kids that I done worked through over the years done been through, because I never been through it. You know, I always had my mom and dad, my family, my siblings, my sisters and brothers. We was always together. even to this day, you know, I'm the only one away from home. Everybody else is back in Dothan, Alabama. I'm in Birmingham. So that's why I run back home every opportunity I get for that bond, that family connection. So, I mean, I try to shy away from saying I understand, you know, when kids say, you know, this and that, I understand. And I just try to be considerate and listen. Also, I often revert back to the CEO because a lot of stuff I learned and I know, you know, I learned it and I know it. I heard it from the CEO, but one of the main things he will say when it comes to tips for foster, you know, to kind of keep a kid in stable environments, is simply let the kid win. I mean, it's so often that the foster parents and the kids and the workers are in power struggles. And majority of the time, the kid loses these power struggles because we want to display or we want to show our dominance. Like, we're the adult, we in control, you know, we set the rules. When a lot of times, we can simply let the kid win or let the kid think they're winning and go back and rectify the situation in different ways. So I would definitely say reduce the power struggles and let the kid win.
I love all of that. Let's hit those points that you hit the nail on the head for me. You mentioned listening. Yeah, that's so hard to do for all of us, right? Like, no matter how old we get, how wise, mature, like, that's still definitely a muscle that we all have to stay exercising to keep that strong, right? Especially when we're listening to adolescents, because they're still learning how to regulate their emotions. They're still learning vocabulary just to be able to express themselves properly. And the fact that you said, don't ever say that you understand, you know what I mean? Because I definitely remember an aunt of mine, she's also a therapist, but she was saying, like, you might be trying to find some kind of commonality and be like, oh, I can understand because yada yada happened to me. But it's not ever the same. You know what I mean?
Right.
Nothing is ever the same. So it's best to say, like, wow, I don't understand what you're going through. I can't imagine what that must feel like, et cetera, because you really don't know all the factors. And even if you do from paper, whatever, if you're their case manager, you still don't understand how that feels. You might look at the factors, but you're not really in it. So I appreciate you saying that. And then lastly, about letting the kid win. Yes. I mean, what are you here for? You know, you have to really check yourself. Like, why am I a foster parent? Am I in this for the right reasons? If not, if it's not all about them, then what am I doing? Like, lay down your ego. You know what I mean? This is, you can't be selfish in the situation. Yeah. So once a disruption has taken place, what do you think are some of the key steps for getting the child back on track, getting them stability again, or like overcoming this upset?
You know, when you just asked me this question, the first thoughts that come to my mind were our seven company core values. I mean, these core values cover a wide range of, you know, emotions, feelings, and qualities and characteristics within the company. Now that you ask this question, I think about it, and I would say definitely our seven core values: honesty, integrity, flexibility, accountability, accuracy, accessibility, and responsiveness. I mean, all of these is values that we must reinstill and reshape into a kid's life once this disruption has taken place. I mean, you have to be honest with the kid. The integrity part, flexible. I mean, we gotta definitely work around this kid's emotions, his behavior, accountability. We gotta take accountability and own up to if we made some mistakes or if we, you know, should have took different directions while working with this child, while servicing this child, that helped to cause this disruption and didn't prevent this disruption. Accuracy. I mean, we gotta be accurate and consistent. Consistency was one of those key components of, you know, of deterring disruption. Accessibility. This child may call me 12:31 o'clock at night. I need to vent, Mr. Coachman. I need somebody to talk to. So I got to be accessible for this child. Not just during peak hours at 9 to 5. Nah, that's not when most disruptions take place, because the kid is active and he's involved in. These disruptions take place whenever you and I are with our family for Thanksgiving or for Christmas or during the holidays, and this kid is sitting there all alone in a foster home where maybe sometimes the parents are not as loving, and these emotions and these behaviors start to hit this kid like, I'm not at home, so I want some attention, so I'm going to get some attention some kind of way. It may not be the way you want me to get attention, but I need some attention. And last but not least, you know, responsiveness. I mean, whenever this kid calls, I'm like, hey, Blase, I'm not feeling good, or I'm fixing to do this. You need to respond. You need to be there for that kid. Also, just a lot of love and trust. You know what I mean? Just show the kid, you know, love, because vibes are, I mean, you can pick up on vibes. I mean, that's part of our nature, to pick up on vibes. So a kid can tell when that love is there or and when it's not. I mean, and the kids want to gain, they want our trust, and they want us to gain their trust. So, I mean, these are some tips that can reduce the disruption, and whenever disruption occurs, these are some of the values that we must instill back within the child to get them back to that mental stability that we're all striving for and working to get them at and keep them at.
One, I'm impressed that you know all the seven key values for SFH, but you are on the continuous quality improvement team, so I expect nothing less, but fantastic. And yes, also, ma'am, thank you for breaking each of those values down with exactly how they is relevant for this. So my last question is, how does maintaining a stable placement increase the chances for reunification? Because we know, like, the other benefits, right? Yeah, of stability. Right. We know, like, yeah. But what does this, like, stability have an effect on, like, for reunification? Does being in one spot, right, or having less foster parents over your track of being in foster care even affect your chances of being reunified with your family? Or is that, like, or even in a way of, like, you're used to being in a stable home now, right? So, like, you'll acclimate better, assimilate better back into your family because, okay, you've been having this, you're already learning everything you're supposed to be learning because you've been in a stable home. People are keeping up with your progress versus, oh, I don't know what this child needs to learn or where they're at or anything, and independent living skills, et cetera, you know?
Yes.
So you can carry on with that
Okay, yes, there's a lot of key components to the development of a child, and to a child, you know, maintaining their placement. But one of the key components is a child needs consistency. So one of the benefits of, you know, a kid remaining in a stable and safe environment is the consistency that this child is receiving over a long period of time. Once this consistency sinks in and this child becomes accustomed to this consistency, it's like a diving board, it's gonna spring this child into a whole new world of opportunities. By this child being consistent in his placement, in his or her placement, it's gonna open the doors for education. This child may just lock in on education at this magnet school that he or she is going to over a period of time. It's going to improve attachment concerns, because a lot of our kids are diagnosed with attachment disorder to the point to where they don't have an attachment with an adult. You know, that has a lot to do with the development of a kid, the kid feeling attached to a loving adult. You know, whether it's a father or a mother or a foster parent or a teacher at school, a kid must feel attachment. If a kid doesn't feel like he's attached, then it's going to cause all kind of developmental delays, you know, within the kid. So, I mean, it also helps with strong mental stability. If a kid is in a stable environment, I mean, it's going to strengthen this kid's mental stability. This kid's going to feel like he or she's going to feel like they have a sense of belonging, like they belong to this family, they belong to this community, they belong to this school, they belong to this, you know, this foster care agency. So, you know, by this kid being stable in one environment, then this kid going to feel, to sum it all up, this kid is going to feel loved. This kid going to feel like, okay, this family love me, or, you know, this community love me. And like I said earlier, it's going to open the door to so many other opportunities by this kid maintaining this placement and being safe and stable in a nurturing and caring environment.
Wow. You wrapped that up perfectly on love. Yes. Is there anything else you would like to add? Anything you think you forgot to mention or that I forgot to ask?
I just have a little saying I want to add. If the quickest way to change the world is to make a change in one kid's life. So, you know, we probably can't save everybody, but we can save that one somebody, and that one somebody can get that ball rolling to help save everybody.
Wow. Well, also, since we're on the topic, I love, you know, a personal story. So I want to know one person that you feel changed it all for you when you were a child. Just one example, because I know it takes a village, right? But can you give us an example of when someone really made a huge impact on your life?
I would definitely have to say my father. I mean, I come from a large family. My father, the Lord's blessing, will be 94 years old in October. My mom just celebrated her 86th birthday, September the 2nd. So I would definitely have to say my parents, but if it was just that one individual, I would definitely say my father. I'm from a family of 15. All he ever instilled in us was to love, you know, each other, love others, and help others. I come from a family that wasn't as fortunate, but we was very fortunate compared to some of the kids that I've been blessed to work with. So, I mean, it's all about just what my dad instilled in us, and that was to help others, pretty much do unto others as you will have them to do unto you. So if you can give back and just help somebody, then I mean, you pretty much done served your calling, because I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about how we treat our neighbor and what we do to help others. So if I mean, it ain't gotta be a mountain moving task that you perform or completed to help others. It could be something simple as telling them, you know, they matters and they can do it, you know, or simply just walking them around the track, holding their hand, or, you know, giving them a little nudge as you walk around the track with them, or maybe even pushing them in a wheelchair or some kind of mechanic device that they need assistance with. So it's those little things like that my dad instilled in us that I still carry with me to this day, and I feel like it's done wonders in my life, because I have had the opportunity, I've been blessed for so many years to just help others.
Thank you for that. I, once again, Chad, you're really just so golden, all your answers. Wow. You're really just sending it home for us all once again, because I want to talk about how, one, you brought up your dad specifically, right? Like, this was the person that was integral in your life, which I wanted to just say, like, you know, the fact that you picked a man in your life, this can speak to the importance of having strong male role models in your life, having a father figure, period, having we need more male, you know, foster parents. We need more male social workers. And then obviously you can look at several various demographics, you know what I mean, around the world, and we need more fathers in the homes. So I love that for you. I love that you have that. And then lastly, just the fact that you mentioned both your parents also, and the fact that we're talking about foster care, having some parental figures in your life, right? And stability with that. The fact that, yeah, your parents played such an integral part in your life. So we're hoping that we can have people, even if you don't have biological children, come be a parent, come mother, come father, a child in need, you know? And then also, hopefully, these tips in this podcast will help you to avoid some of the disruptions that, you know, if you can help it at all, avoid those disruptions so a child can grow up like you in a stable home with the father figure, with the mother figure, etc. Amazing. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This has been your host, Intisar Siraj. Fostering Conversations is sponsored by Siraj Family Homes Incorporated and Al Haj Incorporated. Learn more at www.sirajfh, that's SERAAJFH.com.